Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad you guys are here. Makes it better for church if we have people here. All right. Anybody going to buy fireworks for the 4th? You want to really buy them if you happen to live in a city that it's against the law, because that always adds to the fun and the intrigue involved in doing fireworks. So, well, I'm glad you're here. We're all glad you're here. And I'm especially glad God shows up. Especially. So happy about that. All right. How's everyone's 2018 going so far? Aren't you glad half of it's over? It's like, all right. How many have the illusion that the second half's going to be amazing? Hey, it might not be an illusion, but it might be. Who knows? Only God knows. So today we're going to be closing our series on Stand, because at some point in your walk with God, that's what you have to do. You just have to stand. And we're going to be talking about courageous living in turbulent times. You know, there's something that happens to us in turbulent times, in devastating times and in troubling times. And that is, and you guys have probably noticed this, your world shrinks. You, all that you used to do and all the way you looked at life and all the things that were important to you begin to shrink down, and you start to close in on yourself. Because we have an illusion. An illusion means a fake belief of how we think and often expect our lives to play out. We think that things should flow in a particular way in life. And what happens is reality interferes with that, and we become disillusioned. The illusion we have gets popped by reality, which causes us to have what they call cognitive dissonance. The conflict mentally between what I believe should happen and the reality of what is happening, and they battle each other in our minds. It's oftentimes as Christians. You know, how many know that as a Christian you have those, we have our beliefs about God. We have our beliefs about the way life should flow out as I walk with God. We have all these illusions. And then he spends a lot of time popping those illusions and bringing us to the reality that he's in charge and that he has a plan that we don't understand. So how does one handle what I believe when it's in conflict with what I experience? For example, I believe God loves me, but my reality sometimes feels like he doesn't. I know God can heal, but my reality is he didn't. I know God is present, but my reality is like I feel like he's nowhere around. What do we do in those times? One of the emotional aspects of our humanity is this. When we are in that cognitive dissonance, we close down. We no longer have a look that is outward, and we tend to go into survival mode. We close in. We lock down. And the good thing about that is it's normal. It's normal. It's the human condition. It's what we do. We insulate. We isolate. We spiral in our thinking. And we can, if we stay in that place, we can become dangerous to ourselves. The key in turbulent times is to be consistent, is to continue to operate in a manner we didn't do, to continue to operate in the manner we did before we hit that turbulent time. Now, there will be changes when we get into a turbulent time, but we have to learn to be consistent in the turbulent times as we are in the calm and the stable times. That is a practice that can only take place, and I've shared this with you guys before, when we are in the consistent habit of walking with God, talking with God, being in God's community when life is going well. You know, your testimony isn't built when life is going well. Who doesn't have a good testimony then? You know, I went to work today and I sold a $1 million contract. People go, well, yeah, what testimony is that? Yay! Tell me how you're still believing in God when you haven't sold nothing in 3 weeks and rent's due. Tell me how you walk that out. Let me see how that happens. Let me see your God come through on that one. Let me see. You know, the saddest part for me being a pastor is seeing people who are consistent in doing behaviors that are negative. What are they going to do when it hits turbulence? You know, oftentimes in the good times, we can be alone. I don't need that people. I don't need this. I got my dog and my 7 cats. Because they're better than people, because a bunch of memes on Facebook said that. And I get it. People hurt you. So I don't want to be around people. That's all great when things are going well. But what about when trouble hits? The cat's cool, but the cat's consistent in his behavior. He don't really care. He didn't care really that much about you when things were going great. He's not going to care that much when they're not going that great. The dog, he's just happy to see you. But we need people then in our lives. And when you haven't built a community that you can reach out to that are there for you and you are there for them in the good times, that's a sad state to be in the bad times. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? So we have to learn to be consistent. The problem we struggle with when we're in a turbulent time is we don't make sense out of it. It doesn't make sense. I'm in this cognitive dissonance where what I believe and what I'm experiencing don't connect. How does this happen? What does it do? This is the problem. You are operating on limited information. Faith, the crux of faith is believing in a God who has no limits on the information. He sees everything. He knows everything, and he is working out in your situation something that he wants to accomplish in you and through you and to glorify him. Everything God does in our lives has 3 components. It's for us, it's for others, and it glorifies God. Glorifies God means it advertises God. God's best advertisement is how you operate in turbulent times. That's the greatest advertisement. Why? Because other people are in turbulent times. If they don't have God, they don't know what to do. They struggle. We struggle too, but it's in a different type of way. Trying to understand what God is doing and then learning to trust God. See, faith, if you look at Scripture, faith is quantitative. There's quantities of faith. Every one of us has some faith. The disciples had some faith. Jesus even spoke to people and goes, oh, you have little faith. He said, even if you had the faith of a mustard seed, if you have that tiny of faith, you still can use that. That can move a mountain in your life. The problem is you're moving it one pebble at a time. He says, but to others, he said, to a lady, you have great faith. The disciples one time asked Jesus, increase our faith. Take our faith and make it greater. Because, ooh, boy, that's going to be troublesome for you. Because the deeper the trouble, the broader the trouble, the greater your faith has to be to deal with it. And then what happens? You have experience. Over time, you look at some of the stuff that you used to worry about and you go, what was I thinking? But faith builds upon itself. Paul tells us this in 1 Corinthians 13:12. He says, listen, for now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, but we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. What's he saying? He's saying your information ability right now is like looking in a mirror. If I had a mirror up here, that's why we don't like looking at full-length mirrors, huh? That can be a problematic. But if I had just a mirror, even if I have a full-length mirror, let's say I have a full-length mirror, when I'm looking at it, I only see one part of me. I don't see the inside. I don't see everything. If I'm looking at a picture of you, I see whatever that picture has, but that doesn't show me everything. Paul says, listen, you and I are living as if looking in a mirror and we only see a partial reflection of what's actually there. And then he says, but someday we'll see face to face. If I have a picture of you, I have a little bit of an idea what you look like. But when I see you face to face and you're standing in front of me, I see the whole you. That changes everything. I see, when you're looking at me right now, you're looking at whatever distance you are, whatever the lighting's on you. When I get close to you and you see me face to face, you go, God, he's a lot older than I thought. Or maybe you're saying, wow, he's younger than he looks up there. Oh, who's saying that? Because we can hang out more. Yeah, he's not as heavy as I thought he was. Whatever it is we're thinking, it's partial information. Till we get face to face. Paul says, someday we will see face to face. We will understand the whole. Just as we are understood. So what that means is God understands us wholly. He understands everything about what's going on in our life completely. He lacks no information, although oftentimes we like to help him out with information. How many of us pray and our prayers are really informational stuff we're giving God? You know, Lord, I love it when people pray for me sometimes. They'll go in there, you know, Lord, Joe's been serving you for a while now. His Lord's going, what? Well, I did not know that. Please tell me more. Because we tend to inform God of what's going on, thinking that God would make better decisions if he had the bigger picture, which we're painting for him now. Hey, I get it. It's normal. What enables us to carry on is when we can trust that he does when we have very limited information, because we can't tell the future. Because if God is doing something in my life, he's not only doing it for me, or sometimes it feels like he's doing it against me, but he's actually doing something to impact other people. Your story is only partly about you. Your testimony of God varies according to how we handle the story we're in right now. And your story is going to change. It's going to change. We have limited information. My grandson today, the older one, he's got something about clipping nails. He wanted to clip the middle guy's nails. And he's got a whole kit because that's the way he is. And he's pulling out the file and the little clipper. And he's cutting his nails. And the little guy goes, that is so neat. God made that. He looks at him and goes, God didn't make that. People made that. His limited information at 5 years old is that God makes everything. When he was told in, you know, Sunday school that God makes everything, he literally thinks God makes everything. So he made the little clippers. And the other guys informed him, no, people make those clippers. So he's now having, at his age, cognitive dissonance. They said God made everything. And you're telling me he doesn't? He asked me the other day, the five-year-old, when I was driving him to camp. Camps are a wonderful thing. Thank you, Jesus. Jesus made camps. He made them for parents and grandparents. But he goes, Pop. He calls me Pops. He goes, Pops, how many more sleeps till you die? Because he's trying to figure out in his head with the information he has in his limited life, what's going to happen now? What does my future hold? I've already been taken out. My whole world's changed. When's it going to change again? I said, I don't know. A lot of sleep. Well, Yaya, speaking of Therese, my wife, he goes, Yaya will have more sleeps because she's younger than you. I go, God, would you just... Oh, he's got to bring up the age thing. Tells me of my daughter's fiance, you know, he's way stronger than you. Whatever, dude. Apparently, I'm really old to him. But listen, everybody from this age to our age is working at whatever point of the journey we are, whatever we're going through. We have cognitive dissonance. We're trying to figure out why is it happening, what's going on. And this is where faith, and this is the beautiful part about Daniel, this is where faith comes in when you realize, I have to trust God because my information, my understanding is darkened. Have you ever been in a dark room? You don't see everything. You don't know where everything's at. You're guessing. That he says our understanding of what God is doing is darkened in that sense. We are like walking around with partial light. So we have only one thing really to do is to trust God. And when we can do that, it doesn't change the emotional state of pain and loss and grief and all the things that we go through. But what it does is it gives us a perspective to hold on to. I pity people that don't have God and they try to figure it all out. That's a depressing thing. That is rough. How do you figure that out? You can't. You can't. And the sad thing is, a lot of followers of God, as they get older, grow colder. They've experienced loss and the stuff of life. I wish it wasn't so, but I see it to be so. Is that sometimes when we're youngest in the Lord, our faith is greatest. And then as life happens and we have the cognitive dissonances and the beliefs and the experiences clash, our faith gets colder. Our attitudes get more cynical. Our beliefs twist because we lose our faith and then we become a testimony that isn't very good. How many know some old Christians? And I'm not necessarily saying old in age. You can be frozen, chosen, just because, you know, early in your journey with God if you've known him a long time. I've known people that have known Jesus since they were 5 years old. That's impressive in one way, but it's not impressive when they're 40 and they're cynical about everything. It's like, well, what has happened? You've gotten colder as you got older. You become bitter because of life rather than realizing that you now have the experience to help others in the journey behind you. Because you had the opportunity, and this is a beautiful thing about God. He gives us many chances. You have the opportunity to get through the trials successfully. Why? Because I've shared it with you guys before. You're not the first one to journey through anything in your life. You'll have a lot of first, but you're not the first one. There are people who have navigated it well. That's who you want around you. People that have gone through what you've gone through and navigated it. Didn't mean the boat ain't all beat up, because it is. But the sail's up, we're still moving. We're still heading in a direction we want to go. I'm still moving towards the throne. Still moving toward my destiny. Because the reality is, that's all you really have control over is you. How many have tried to control people? It's not that successful. I can't even control the two-year-old. It's like, dude, one poop in 4 hours. That's what we're doing here. That poop here, poop a half hour later, not into it. Do it when Yaya's watching you. We play a different rule here. See, 6 months ago, that wasn't even an issue to me. Now it's my daily routine. You never know. What's my job to do? Handle it. Handle it. Handle it. And despite his advanced years, Daniel remained steadfast in his courage to live out his faith. He believed that God was sovereign, that God was in control, that God had a plan. And that wasn't an easy thing for him to do. Let me tell you his initial cognitive dissonance, his initial belief. You know, the Jews believed in the land of milk and honey. They believed God had given them this place called Judah. But not only did they give him Judah, he gave him Jerusalem, and he said he would be there. And he had demonstrated his power by destroying all the old history before this time of Daniel. The hundreds of years when Moses led the people out of bondage, when the Egyptians were killed, and the mightiest nation at the time was destroyed in the Red Sea. How God conquered what would seem to be the unconquerable people. And over, God showed himself strong. And then these Babylonians come along and defeat Egypt and then attack Judah and take all these slaves, including Daniel, young man, 16 years old, and take him and put him into servitude for this foreign nation. And he is now an immigrant. He's going, what the heck? I thought we were supposed to be in charge. I thought this, how was this to be? What? And then for the next 70 years, he lives as a captive. In fact, never ever goes back. He had to wrap his head around that. His belief was because it was in him in the good times that God is in charge. And so he knew, with the limited information he had of what's going on, there's something more going on here. And he held on to that. And he says, I'm going to be faithful to my God no matter what. And from the first time of chapter 1 and 2 to now we're in chapter 6, which is the end of his journey. It's not chronological, that book. It's really at the end of his life. He has been consistent in his faith walk, no matter the circumstances. He was, like Chris said earlier, ride or die. I'm riding with the Lord. If that kills me, then it kills me. If it gives me life and great things, then it gives me life and great things. That is not the determining factor. The determining factor is God. I stick with him. So we pick up this story with the fourth king, third and fourth king, he is under in that 70-year period, because the Babylonians fell to the Medes and the Persians. This group joined together, became allies, attacked the Babylonians, conquered them, and now they were in charge. So Daniel is living through this stuff, and when he's about 80 years old, this happens. So all his life now has been in flux to foreign leadership. It says it pleased Darius. Darius was the governor that was placed there by a guy named Cyrus over this area of Babylon, which was in modern-day Iraq. It says it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps, and we're in Daniel 6:1, to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them. One of them was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. He appointed, he delegated them so they would take care of business so the king, Cyrus, would not have to worry about it. He'd get what he needed from this country. It says, now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps of his by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to place him over the whole region. You know, see, one of the things God calls us to do, because we are foreigners. Bible tells us if you're a believer in Jesus, this isn't the end game for us. The new earth will be the end game. The combination of heaven meeting earth, that's going to be the end game. But right now, you're an ambassador here. Do a good job. You serve the kingdom not well when you constantly complain about the government, the king, the sitting king. We have a king now, we're going to have another one. We had one before, we're going to have him again, unless the Lord comes back, and if he comes back, yippee. But until then, be a blessing to this community. If you're a teacher, be a blessing to your class. If you're an employer, be a blessing to the employees and to your clients. We have called, if you're married, be a blessing to your family. In the midst of it all. See, I don't get to not be a blessing anymore. Because stuff happens in my life that I don't like. That has nothing to do with nothing. I still got to handle those emotions, but I walk by faith. You do too. You're going to walk by faith in something. So he was doing a great job, and because of his consistency in doing his work well, which is part of faith, he gets promoted. That's a good thing. He gets promoted in the kingdom. Things are going well. But see, if they weren't going well, and he's already had a number of incidents where they didn't, still serving God. That's the key to life. I'm telling you, the key to life right now is serving God in the good times, serving God in the bad times. Doesn't change. It doesn't matter. My information is always going to be limited. My feelings, they can be unlimited. I go through a lot of feelings. I go through a lot of feelings. Every day I shudder like four times because I just cannot think of the gunshots of my daughter. And I shudder. It just, and it's out of the blue. I'll be driving and it'll just rock me. I just keep driving. You know, and I just go, wow. You know, and I deal with it however is, you know, I just deal with the emotion and I don't let the emotions run my life. Doesn't make me sad and cry and yada yada. It means that I know I am operating. See, I have to keep telling myself that. I only have partial information. I know God's doing something. I don't get it. I don't like it. But I know God's doing something. I have to keep talking myself down. How many know that that's part of faith? How many of us have thought that we shouldn't have to do that? That's an illusion. Bet it didn't work that well for you. You have to this thing in here loves the ideal. Yeah, if you've ever done any of those personality tests and one of your, you know, ways you view the life is an idealist, you're in for a ride. You know, when it says you're a pragmatist and a realist, it's like, oh, that's easier. Because you know that life's going to, hey, it's good now, but I know sucks coming. You're already gearing up for it. You already know. And there's a good part to that because when it does, it's like, huh? I remember telling myself when I was younger in the Lord, I had a big aha when my daughter became pregnant at 16, is that the Lord spoke to me and he said, who do you think you are different? Or no, he didn't say that because he uses proper English. Basically, he said this: why do you think you're exempt from the things other people go through? Like, because I should be? Because I'm a Christian now? I raised a right? I did all, you know, I dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's? God knows I beat the love of the Lord into her. Hammered her. We did all the devotionals at dinner. We were at church when the doors were open. You owe me. Because I had that kind of mentality. That if I do this, this, and this, and this, God somehow owes me. I'm following Jesus. Some of you have that mentality right now. He owes me a good dude. He owes me a good chick. Okay, any chick will do. Just a chick. Or a guy. Or something. He owes me my health. He owes me that great job. I've had a rough childhood. He owes me. No, you had a rough childhood because a lot of people do. But he's going to show you how he can restore that into something good, and then you can bless others who have had as rough or rougher childhoods. Found out something interesting the other day. We do grief share here. Come to find out, the people that started that lost two kids too. It was like, well, that's comforting. And they turned that into something that has helped many, many, many people through their own grief. It's like, wow, well, thank you for that. Thank you. You've helped us. I'm sure they wouldn't have chose that. No, like we don't choose our stuff. We just get our stuff. And Daniel didn't choose this, but the key is being consistent. So he chooses these guys. They're doing great. And it says, at this, when the king made his intentions known that he was going to put Daniel in charge, a bunch of guys got jealous. A bunch of other leaders became jealous. How many know that not everybody is for your success? The administrators and the satraps, it says in verse 4, tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him. He had a reputation of walking right, and even when they tried to get him to compromise, he didn't do it. This isn't like he didn't do it this week. He's got 60 years of living this way. It has become him. I don't work against my morals. I don't do it. I don't put myself in the situation. I don't do it. Temptation, you and I live in a world of temptation. But when we get used to doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do, that becomes our reputation, which is our character, as I shared with you guys before. Your reputation is your character. I'm known as this, but that's not really me. Yeah, it is. It is really you. To change that, you got to change the way you do life. Then your reputation changes. Your reputation can change. My reputation can change. I've had people come up to me, and ask me, I thought you'd quit the church after this. I thought your faith would be shipwrecked. I go, well, where else could I go? I got to work. God's still in charge. He's still in charge. Daniel, he's still in charge. The king says, hey, you're a great guy, and these people are against him. Either way, Daniel goes, God's still in charge. So what do these guys do? They plan to get him. It says, finally, after trying to get him to blow it, finally these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. He says, listen, this guy is sold out for God. We're going to have to place him against the king. So they do this. So the administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, may King Darius live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or a human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, Your Majesty, please issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Here's what's going on. They said, listen, we know this dude prays all the time. We have to pit him against the king. So King Darius, you are a god. So we're going to ask you to write. And this is something that the Medes and Persians did that the Babylonians didn't. Babylonians could change their mind. The king could change his mind anytime he wanted. The Persians didn't do that. When an edict was made, when a law was set in place, it could not be changed. Well, there's a couple things that does. One, it makes the king think before he writes a law, because he's not going to be able to change it tomorrow. He's not going to get drunk on Friday, write a law, and then on Saturday go, yay, bad law. He couldn't change it. Second, that creates stability in the land. When you have laws that do not get enforced, you create instability in the land. We're facing that in our country in a number of ways. You either change the law or you deal with how it should be implemented, how it should be enforced. So we got this guy, he's saying 30 days. Anybody's got to pray for you. Hey, here's an option for Daniel. 30 days, I can pray to the dude for 30 days. Then it's easy. No problem, they can't mess with me, nothing's going to happen. Who can't do something for 30 days? A lot of us, huh? But they said, this guy will not bow down to the king and one, call him a god. And it's funny how foolish man is. Darius, he's willing to accept being a god, but he couldn't tell that his guys are playing him. They're playing him for the fool. So he writes the law down and he can't change it. They get the word to Daniel. And this is what happens. It says, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, so they put it out there, they nail it around. Obviously, being a leader in the community, he gets the laws first, and he looks at it. He gets the law. He went home to his upstairs room where the window opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God as he had done before. He looked at it, and he goes, embrace the suck. That's going to suck. Because I'm going to pray to my God. I've been doing it for 70 years now. 60, I'm 80s. It's the way I do it. If I die, I die. He knew it. And he left his window open. He didn't even do it in secret. And he faced Jerusalem because Jerusalem was the home of his God, was the promised destination of his people. Just like you and I, the promised destination of us is heaven and then the new heaven and the new earth. We have something we're praying towards. He didn't have all the information. He had some information that you got to pray to this dude. He had been in his lifetime through a number of trials. Every king tried to kill him. Couple of them more than once. I mean, literally tried to kill him. Whatever, it's ride or die. He starts praying again. Of course, they come up. It's a trap. They come up and get him. And they take him to the king. And it says this, then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about the royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? King answered, yes, the decree stands, in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. Then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, 70-something years later, he's still referred to as an immigrant. Hey, the foreigner that you appointed. Remember, we all grew up here in Babylon. We're all Babylonians, but not this clown. He pays no attention to you, your majesty, or the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Tried to talk him into it, tried to tell him not a big deal, just throw out a little prayer, doesn't matter. Whatever he was trying to do to save this guy was an asset to the kingdom. But he couldn't change the law, so the law stood. And when Daniel would not pray to him at all, Daniel's fate was sealed. It says, verse 15, right? Then the men as a group went to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issued can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. And the king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, consistently, I know about you, may he rescue you." What's the deal with lions? Here's, in those days, a lot of the kings would hunt lions. That would be one of the things they were doing. Instead of hunting foxes or going out and shooting quail or whatever, they hunted lions. So they would gather the lions from wherever they would get them, put them in these massive dens, and then feed them whatever they would feed them. And oftentimes it was a punishment to throw someone in there to be the food for the lions. But they kept these lions to be hunted. So they probably weren't treated that well. And so it wasn't uncommon for that to happen. So he says, you know, it's a way to really punish people, let them be torn up by these starving lions who are waiting to be hunted. So these lions are not in a good place. So he says, but listen, I'm going to put you in there. We're going to seal it up, and may God protect you guys. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the ring of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. He was just bothered. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den, and when he came near the den, he called Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, may your God whom you serve continually, or has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever." That's a nice one. See, that guy's got great faith. I'd say something different. He said, "Hey, God sent his angel." Daniel's met the angels a number of times. As I told you before, he's introduced us in Scripture to both Michael and Gabriel, two of the archangels. He said, "My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I done any wrong before you, your majesty." This is the thing with following God. You bless the opposers. He honored God. And when you don't honor that which is wrong, you actually become a testimony to them. That's oftentimes where our testimonies get messed up, is because we try to honor them and it becomes all convoluted. Honor God and you will bless those who oppose you. So if he says, "Forgive them, may you live forever, king. You just wanted me dead. May you live forever." When you can pray for your persecutors, you've come a long way. You've come a long way. Period. I don't have anything else to say after that. He says, "They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent. I did right by you by not bowing down to a man and worshiping him." And I'll tell you what, I have met many people that have made a male or a female their god and have bowed down to worship him, and they didn't get anything good out of that. He says, "Listen, I found you innocent in his sight, nor have I done anything wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. Yeah, but if he would have been torn to shreds, he still would have trusted in his God. He went into the den. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. See, God is just. Jesus just told this guy this. He said, vengeance is mine. I will repay. That's why we never have to repay. And he repays better. He gets the wives and the kids. Heck, we'd only kill them. But no, he's much more thorough. His grace is much more complete. His vengeance is much more complete. He will repay. It's not our job. It is not our job. Our job is to obey him in the lion's den or as the third person in charge of everything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. When it's all going well or it's all going to hell, what's it matter? He is who I follow. Why? Because he's got all information. And see, what happens is now the testimony to Darius becomes amazing. He sees that this guy's God controls the lions. He controls the beast. Whoa! I don't know if he ever believed, but the testimony was powerful. And you and I read it thousands of years later, and it's powerful to us. Because this is the truth, and we got to get out of here. You're all going to be in your lion's den at some point. You're all going to be in the lion's den. You might be in it right now. You might be third in charge, heading to the lion's den, not even knowing it. But your testimony isn't that he was, the great testimony here isn't that he was going to be put in charge of everything. The great testimony is he went into the lion's den believing and trusting in God that God would deliver him one way or the other. Deliver him out, deliver him through. And it said there wasn't one mark on him. So that means he might have delivered him with a bunch of bites on him too. God could have delivered him where he comes out and goes, Jesus! All tore up. Because he did that with some of his guys. They put John in boiling oil. Jesus' body today, his glorified body, scarred up. Hey, so this is the deal. Whether you're in the lion's den, whether you just got out, you're heading into freedom. Because this is what they said to him. This is what Darius said to him at the end. We'll just jump to this. It says, So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. This thing caused him to prosper. Do you know your lion's den is going to cause you to prosper if God finds you innocent in it? In other words, if you live by faith in it, he's going to prosper you. He's going to prosper you in it, and he's going to prosper you when you're out of it. You just don't get to choose how long you're in the den. This guy had one night. In the king's edict, he didn't put a week until eaten, a month, leave him in there forever. So he worked and manipulated his own little thing. One night, as long as he just has to stay in there one night, then he's okay. You may have to stay in there longer. Doesn't matter. God is going to have an angel with you, and God's presence is going to be with you in it. And he's going to get you through it. That's the information you have to hold on to. Amen? All right, let's stand and pray. Lord, help Joe get this message shorter. Second service. And help me to walk in the lion's den unharmed and as a great testimony to the power of my God. Whether I have to go through it, whether he delivers me out of it, I will be a testimony. Amen. Bless you guys. Have a great day.